422-0575-WC consolidated with 422-0576-WC. Joseph E. Bowen, appellant by Thomas Licton versus the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission. William A. Niekamp, Truck Service Incorporated, appellee by Jason Jordan.
Mr. Licton, you may proceed. Mr. Licton? Hello? Mr. Licton? Therese, is he connected?
We're going to try to contact him here.
Okay. We have his video, but no audio.
Let's call him. I'm going to stop the recording, would you say?
Yeah.
Now?
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Tom Licton, and I'm the attorney for the appellant, Joseph Bowen. And may it please the court, what I'm asking you to do is to affirm everything that the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission awarded and found in its oral art, in its decision and opinion on review, with the exception of we don't agree that the Section 19K and Section 16 penalties and attorney's fees should have been deleted. I think what you have in this case is what I would call sort of a smoking gun in favor of the petitioner, because first of all, the petitioner, Joe Bowen, he's a was a 6 foot three, 330 pound truck driver. He was 46 years old at the time of the accident, and he was driving back and forth with several other of these drivers between Quincy and Chicago. They would take a load of wood, milled wood, up to Chicago and then pick up a load of steel, drive it back to Quincy the same day. When he was in the New Era Steel Company yard, and he was pulling himself up into the cab of his truck, of his flatbed truck, put his left foot on the first rung, put his right foot on the second rung, pulled himself up, and as he described it, his right knee exploded, and he had severe pain. Had to call a co-driver to help him get down because he couldn't even put any weight on his right leg. Somehow he managed to drive all the way back to Quincy, which is about 325 miles. When he got back to Quincy at 3 a.m. that morning, or the next morning, actually, it would have been April 15th. The accident was on April 14th. His wife picked him up at the yard where he dropped the truck off and took him. She had some crutches. She brought those with her, took him directly to the hospital, the Blessing Hospital emergency room. And the history that he gave was what I just stated, that as he was pulling himself up into the cab of the truck, he experienced severe sudden pain in his right knee. When this had happened, back when he was still in Chicago, or actually also, he had called the owner of the company, Mr. Niekamp, and told him exactly what happened. And also there was a co-driver, another driver, Chris Bennett, who he had called on the CB once he got back into the, once he got into the truck, to give him a hand. And he said that he told them the same thing that he told the emergency room people. So my point is being, and they're claiming that no, he was just walking across the blacktop and all of a sudden his leg gave out and he fell to the ground. First of all, that doesn't even make sense that that could happen. But certainly he wouldn't, if he was driving back, leaving at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, getting back to Quincy at 3 in the morning, he wouldn't have, how in the world could he have any way of inventing a different story? I mean, why, or why would he even? Because he's not a lawyer. He doesn't know the law. So I felt, and I still feel, that that was basically irrefutable proof that it happened exactly the way he said it happened, and that the arbitrator, Arbitrator Lee, was correct in finding that penalties were appropriate, not just under Section 19L, but also under Section 19K and attorney's fees under Section 16, because the other side concocted their defense. When I was trying to get Mr. Bowen's benefits started, and I contacted the claims adjuster, she never said anything about, oh, well, he didn't get hurt the way he says he did. He got hurt a different way. She was just saying, well, I have the records from Quincy Medical Group where he has that history, but I don't have the, or she didn't even say anything about a history. Actually, I have the records from Quincy Medical Group. I don't have the hospital records because I don't know which hospital it is. And I couldn't get I wasn't able to get him to give me a recorded statement, something like that. She didn't say anything about this supposed defense that they came up with at a trial, saying that he just got hurt walking across the blacktop just out of the blue. So that, I would say, is, I don't, as I say, irrefutable evidence, I think, that not only was the 19L penalty, which is, as we know, under the McMahon case and others, considered to be sort of a late fee, but also that, I'm sorry, somebody say something? No, I'm sorry. Not only that, but also that under Section 19K, those penalties were very appropriate and should have been appropriate, because if it's a frivolous defense or not in, concocted and not actually credible, then it shouldn't be considered to be something that is a, the dropping of those penalties shouldn't be considered to be okay as not being against the manifest weight of the evidence, because the question is whether it's against the manifest weight of the credible evidence. And I don't think that evidence was credible. The arbitrator didn't think so. And I don't see any way that it could be. And the respondent has never come up with anything in their arguments or briefs to explain how that could have happened. And in fact, they, in their brief before the commission and also in their reply or response brief here, they suggested, well, he didn't actually report it until he got back, or until the next day or the day after he got back, which isn't true. He reported it as soon as he got back to the Quincy and got to the emergency room. So there's that. The commission, I think, was very correct. There's another issue that needs to be addressed, and which is the question of credit. In 1997, the petitioner had injured his right knee and had a loose body removed from his right knee. And he was pro se, and he received a settlement of $10,000 a year or two later. And he never filed a claim. It was just something that was provided to him. He never had any problems for the next, well, he had some problems initially when he first tried to go back to work in 1998 and a little bit in 1999, but nothing for the next 15 years of any kind until this accident happened, which was determined to be a tear, or several tears actually, of both the medial and lateral menisci of his right knee. So at the trial, the respondent's attorney did not present the prior, the document documenting the prior settlement, what the amount was. He said he was putting it in evidence as part of one of his exhibits. I said, I don't see it in here. The copy you gave me doesn't have it in here. I don't see it. And Arbitrator Lee said, well, I'm going to rely on whatever is in the exhibit, if it's in there. But it wasn't. And he didn't even take the trouble to make sure that it was. So it wasn't. So what the arbitrator did in his decision was, well, I don't know for sure what the prior award or settlement amount was for in terms of percentage, but I believe that the man is entitled to 20% loss of use of his right leg over and above whatever it was previously, which I thought was very fair. And that seems to be consistent with the thinking of why that's in the law. So subsequently, the respondent has made all kinds of arguments about, well, it's the commission's responsibility or it's the arbitrator's responsibility to dig that information up. It's not our responsibility. Well, they thought it was their responsibility at trial. And I think it, in my experience, that's always been the way it's been handled. I think the commission was correct in affirming the 20% award, because basically the way the arbitrator put it, and also the Adams County Circuit Court judge initially also said, well, this makes sense to me too. So I don't think that that argument holds any water. I think the law was correctly found by the commission in that regard. And we relied on the Dorsey case, which I believe says that that's the it's the responsibility of the respondent to provide whatever evidence there is if they're claiming a credit. It's their duty to do that. So I think that, as I said before, the commission's decision was, except for the denial of 19K and Section 16 penalties and attorney's fees, was a correct one. The respondent points to, the commission said it wasn't unreasonable and vexatious. Well, if you look at Section 19K, that's where the language unreasonable and vexatious is. Section 19L, which is a lesser penalty provision called a late fee, that has different language where they're using words such as fail, neglect, refuse, or unreasonably delay. But it's nothing, none of the language that's in 19K where there's saying that it's frivolous, if it's frivolous or vexatious, and they said it wasn't vexatious. Well, I don't know. I think it was vexatious. You got a man who gets hurt, has a bad injury, has to have surgery, can't work for a period of time, and all of a sudden he has no income. What happens is these people who are put in that position, they're kind of at the mercy of these loan companies that charge 40 to 60%. Interest, and to just keep it, their heads above water, they pretty much are stuck with that. So these penalty provisions are important that they be enforced. And if I thought that there was any question about the truth of the petitioner's position and the way what happened, that would be a different thing. But there isn't any question about it. And
counsel. Counsel, isn't it less about whether or not petitioner's claim is true and more about whether or not the commission believed that there was a potential defense? So asking another way, does the commission, if the commission doesn't believe that it was unreasonable or vexatious because there's an argument that he did blow out his knees simply walking across the parking lot. So there's a fair argument either way, I guess, would be the argument.
Well, the commission said that they felt it was that the respondent had presented a good faith defense. I think that is contrary to the manifest weight of the credible evidence. I don't think it was a good faith defense. I think they concocted it, just like Arbitrator Lee said. Maybe giving them the most possible benefit of the doubt, you could say, well, maybe there was a misunderstanding or something, that they didn't really get the everything that Joe Bowen told them when he got hurt. But I don't believe that. And it was because it wasn't even presented until much later that they, you know, that they had this defense. And so I think the commission was wrong to say it was a good faith defense. I don't think it was made in good faith. And I think the evidence shows, I mean, if you look at the records, just as I said, it's almost unfathomable that it could have happened any way other than what Mr. Bowen said. Thank you. I don't know if I have any time left, but.
Well, yes, you do.
I do. Okay.
You also will have time in reply.
All right. Well, thank you, Your Honor. I'll stop at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lichten. Mr. Jordan, would you care to respond?
Thank you. May it please the court. Counsel Jason Jordan on behalf of the appellee. Maybe I'm wrong in the minds of the justices, but I think the most legally interesting part of this case is the credit. So I want to spend most of my time on that. I'll touch on the other issues real quick here. Mr. Lichten has brought up whether the 20% PPD determination by the commission was correct or not. That issue is not on appeal. We did appeal that issue to the commission, but didn't take it any farther than that. And as far as I'm aware, no one is claiming that that's wrong. So that's the easiest issue to dispose of in the argument. The second easiest issue to dispose of the argument is 19K in section 16, because, and I'll touch on the commission's finding that our defense was reasonable and not vexatious, but even if Mr. Lichten's argument were being accepted, 19K and 16 are discretionary. Those are step two of the 19K 16 analysis is, did the commission abuse its discretion? And there's no evidence that the commission abused its discretion. So now let's go to step one of 19K and 16, which also applies to 19L. And I agree with Mr. Lichten, 19L is a lower standard, but we know from the undisputed case law, the standard is that of one of reasonableness. In this case, the commission found our defense reasonable. And the law also states that it's not ultimately who the commission decides to believe, because that is their realm. They can judge the credibility of witnesses. That's not just because they find Mr. Bowen more credible than the two witnesses we presented. That's not the standard. The standard is the defense reasonable?
Well, can I ask you a question?
Yes,
what exactly was the defense? That he slipped in the parking lot, or that he told them he slipped in the parking lot?
So up until, obviously in comp, we don't have discovery. Up until trial, we don't have petitioner's testimony. What we had is we had a co-employee who's present at the scene and is told by Bowen that his knee blew out walking across the parking lot. What we have is the employer who received a call from Bowen who said his knee blew out walking across the parking lot. And we also have years of prior medical records that makes that, I mean, Mr. Lichten said, you know, I've never heard of someone's knee giving out, you know, walking across the park. Well, I've heard of it. In fact, I'm that guy. I had my knee give out.
I take it your argument is, to get off this point so we can get on to the other thing. Your argument is, the statement that he said that he was injured in the parking lot was not made exclusively by the employer. It was supported by the testimony of a co-employee.
There was evidence. There was testimony of two people supporting that. Yes, Justice. And if that were to have been believed, it would have been personal risk, not compensable.
Yeah. So, all right. Okay.
So that takes me to the credit, which I do think by far is the most interesting aspect of this case. And when we look at the credit, first of all, I would invite the court, the record at C-646 is, let me start with the concept that Mr. Lichten claims we didn't raise this issue. Well, if we didn't raise this issue at arbitration, why was it addressed? If we didn't raise the issue at the commission, why was it addressed? The issues were raised. C-646 is the beginning of what we put in, and we're stuck with what the commission gives us when we request records. On C-646 is the very case number that Mr. Bowen then testified that he got. I'll be honest here. Evidence is, I go back to the basic definition. Evidence is something that proves a fact more or less likely to be true. It's not necessarily documentary evidence. So I would suggest that petitioner's testimony alone in this case proves the existence of the credit. But besides that, C-646, which was put in arbitration, is the commission's own record evidencing case 98WC-19149 belongs to Joseph Bowen. And we had corroborating testimony that that is the correct Joseph Bowen. And it's a unique situation. The commission is, I mean, it's probably technically inaccurate for me to say they're a party to every settlement, but they must review and approve every settlement by statute. They have knowledge of every settlement, and they are the sole keepers of the records of these settlements. So if I can find it, certainly the commission who has the ability and the obligation to look at their own records could also look at it. There's a prior, and we hear it from Mr. Lichten today, there is a prior credit that it's undisputed. He had the prior settlement. So, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the arbitrator's decision because obviously it's plain that this court doesn't review the arbitrator's decision, but it is important for us to recognize arbitrator's lease determination is wrong on its face. On his decision, he uses the pre-2011 statute and he doesn't use the 8.1BB factors, which are mandatory by the legislature. So the commission did not affirm and adopt arbitrator Lee. They used a very gentle word. They said they clarified it. No, they didn't. They rewrote it because on his face of his decision, he says, I'm using the pre-2011 standard. So when they rewrote it, they're very clear. They used 8.1BB to come up with 20% loss of use of the leg, and they gave no prior credit. And what the circuit court has done is they said, how can you not see this credit? And they applied the 22.5 prior credit to the 20% award. I don't even know the correct word to use. The idea that an arbitrator would say, I don't know what the prior credit is, but I'm going to give them 20% on top of it. That's not good law. The law is 8.1BB tells us what nature and extent is. We evaluate the factors. And then the statute tells us the commission shall deduct from that number a prior credit. It's not, the law is not, figure out what the prior credit is and then give petitioner a little bit more. That's not the law.
Good, so counsel, can I ask a question? He testified, when he testified, that he had this prior injury. They gave him $10,000 and it was for 20%. You say, would you be surprised if it was for 21.5? And that's the evidence that supports the credit?
That is some of the evidence that supports the credit, Justice.
Well, can I ask you a question? What was the proper amount of compensation for a loss of a leg back in 1997?
Well,
would it shock you if I told you it was 200 weeks?
No, that would not shock me.
What's 20% of 200 weeks?
20% of 200 weeks would be 40.
4,000, I believe, wasn't it? Wouldn't it be? For 40 weeks?
40, yes.
All right, so 40 weeks times his average weekly wage would be $10,000. Was that established?
Well, so it was not established, but the case law tells us we don't have to know.
We've lost your audio there, Mr. Jordan.
Your audio's gone.
You're now frozen visually. I think we have a...
So the case law tells us we don't care about the dollar amount. We care about the percentage loss of use of the leg for credit.
There's no question. My question is, did you establish the percentage loss of use? I'm trying to back into it mathematically but there's no evidence that allows you to back into it mathematically. And isn't it your burden to establish the credit to which you're entitled?
So the sole burden, according to the case law, is that compensation was paid. That is what the case law tells us my burden is.
No, that it has to have been paid for you to be entitled to the credit. My question is, whose burden is it to prove that there was a prior claim, compensation was paid, and the amount of loss for which that compensation was paid? Because it's that loss that has to be subtracted from the current loss to determine the net compensable loss, if it's of the same body part. So if you have not proven the percentage of loss for which he was compensated in the prior case, how can it be said that you satisfied your burden of proof of the amount of credit to which you're entitled?
Your audio is gone again, Mr. Jordan.
Back on.
There is no case law which suggests I have a burden of proof on the issue. The sole thing that the case law tells me is I have to establish compensation.
Here. That just doesn't make any sense. You know, there's only two parties to this litigation. There's the petitioner and the respondent. If your theory was correct and it wasn't your burden, I guess it was the petitioner's burden in every case to prove he never had a prior accident that was compensable for that portion of his body?
So
it's got to be your burden. It can't be anything else.
My obligation, Justice, is to prove that compensation has been paid. And
for what? To prove what the compensation was for.
And not only did we prove compensation was paid, we proved the amount too, because the commission can take judicial notice of its own records. And in its records, it maintains the record that there's 22 and a half paid for the prior injury.
But the commission said they have no record. They couldn't find one.
And that's where the commission erred, and the circuit court has corrected that error, because it's as simple as looking in the commission's database, and it's there. And in fact, not only do I say that, Commissioner Brennan, when we were there on the 19F, his issue was not that the commission did not have the record. His issue was, well, I can't tell you if it's the same Joseph Bowen. That was his issue. He saw the record. He knew the record existed. The commission, he's now the chairman, but he was a commissioner.
What's the purpose of the 19F?
The person of 19F is to correct a clerical error.
What was the clerical error in the original decision?
It was alleged the clerical error was not deducting 22 and a half from the 20.
That, sir, is not a clerical error. Clerical error is 2 + 2 = 5. That's a clerical error.
And that is what the commission found. And we have not pursued that here in front of this court. The hearing, though, is evident that the commission had that record. Commissioner Brennan acknowledged he had that record. He said, but I don't know it's the same Joseph Bowen. That's where the testimony is evidence. There was no requirement.
But that was at a 19F hearing, wasn't it?
Correct. But it's proof of the fact that the commission has the record. The commission, in fact, I wasn't practicing in 1997, let alone did I know Joseph Bowen in 1997. Where does the record come from? It comes from the commission. They're the sole source of that record. And the reality is they have the record, and the circuit court found that they had the record. So the fact that they had the record and they were asked, they're the body of original jurisdiction, they were asked to take judicial notice of their own record, and they failed to do so. It's acknowledged by everyone. The testimony supports that is his settlement. And the commission, the legislature is it's mandatory. It's a shall. The commission shall deduct the amount. The fact that there is an amount acknowledged by everyone states, and it doesn't change the PPD because we know PPD is calculated using 8.1BB. The factors in 8.1BB don't care about the credit. The factors in 8.1BB establish the amount of permanency, and then the commission shall deduct the prior credit. And it's just, clear in this case that the commission has the record, and they, no one's perfect, but they didn't, their decision on its face says we can't find the record. And then when we go up on the 19F, Commissioner Brennan acknowledges they have the record. He just says, I just don't know if it's the same Joseph Bowen. And as we point out in our brief, the date matches, the numbers match. I mean, I think petitioner said it was about $10,000, and it was $10,600 or $10,700, but he established the validity of that settlement was his settlement. And I see I'm out of time, so unless there's any other questions, I appreciate the time.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Jordan? No, I don't believe there are. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lichten, you may reply.
Thank you, Justice Holdridge. I agree, and I'm glad Justice Hoffman asked the question, because I really thought that that 19F maneuver, or whatever you want to call it, it wasn't a clerical error at all. It was a way for them try to get into through the back door what they failed to put into evidence, even though I told Mr. Kelly at the trial, and Arbitrator Lee said, you need to make sure it's in there, and they didn't do it. They agreed that it was their duty, and they didn't do it. And then on review, or actually with this 19F thing, they tried to get it into evidence through the back door, which it's not a clerical error, absolutely. And it was just, I thought, an improper way to handle that matter. But the point is, it is their duty. That's what the Dorsey case said. And, the way Arbitrator Lee handled it, putting everything else aside, is, in a common sense way, was, the man had a prior injury where he got some kind of compensation. It was the only surgery that he had was the removal of a loose body. He worked for the next 15 years with no problems, no treatment, nothing for his knee or either knee until this happened. Now he's got, a knee with two menisci that are severely damaged. He's got major problems, especially for a guy who's 330 pounds. 20%, I thought, was the respondent should have been happy that the arbitrator
didn't. Mr. Lichten, I have a little bit of a problem. Assume that a fact is capable of judicial notice, and the fact is not established before the arbitrator. Is it fair game in making their decision that the commission take judicial notice of it? Or if judicial notice was not taken before the arbitrator, is it outside of the sphere of permissibility for the commission to take judicial notice of?
I don't think judicial notice would cover this kind of situation.
I mean, the reason why I asked the question is I happen to agree with you that the attempt to introduce the decision through a 19F was an attempt to reopen proofs after they'd been closed. It has nothing to do with a clerical error. But the question becomes, could the commission take judicial notice of it, or must the commission take judicial notice of it when the matter goes before them on review?
I don't think so. I mean, the record, as we know, after the trial, you can't add anything additional on review. Of course, that's evidence, I guess, but to rely on that.
Well, the thing that you take judicial notice of is evidence.
Well,
that's why you ask to have judicial notice taken.
Well, then I would say, yeah, they can't take judicial notice of it. And also, I mean, now we've got the comp file system, which has a lot of problems. And if you're trying to look up something, a case that happened before, whenever comp file went into effect, 2021 or whenever, it's a heck of a thing to do. I mean, that's, I guess, not what we're looking at here, but I think that the issue is whether they met their burden to get the credit that they wanted. And in effect, Arbitrator Lee gave him the credit based on his common sense understanding. So I don't think the commission can take judicial notice of that kind of thing. I think it's not part of the case. It's not evidence. They didn't do it. And they were not arguing that it was something that commission should take judicial notice of or anything like that. At the trial before Arbitrator Lee, it was only after they realized that they had messed up, and then they tried to do this other thing. Also, I wanted to mention the commission did make a mistake in their decision where they said that the respondent had paid TPD benefits when Mr. Bowen, they put him back to work, but they were only giving him like $10 an hour and 3 hours a day of work, and they gave him an old junk Kenworth truck that he could barely get into. That never happened. They never paid a penny for anything. My client was just lucky that his wife had Blue Cross insurance, or he never would have been able to even get the surgery that he needed for his busted up knee. And also, they didn't claim that Chris Bennett and the owner, they didn't claim that Mr. Bowen said that he slipped on the blacktop. They just claimed that he said that he just went down or something like that. And that's not in any of the medical records. What is in every single medical record is whether he was pulling himself up, and that's when his knee all of a sudden blew up, when he was pulling himself up into the cab of his truck, of a semi-trailer.
Mr. Lichten, your time has expired. The red light is on.
Thank you so much, Justice Holdridge.
Okay. Any questions from the bench before we close out? No? Okay, very good. Well, thank you, counsel, both for your arguments in this matter this afternoon. It'll be taken under